I just want to remind you, you are tuned to WPRB 103.3 FM or online at www.wprb.com. We listen now to music by my guest, Martha Muck. You were just listening to Omotion, a composition by Martha Muck, who was our performer on the electric five-string viola. Well, today, up until 11 o'clock, I am being joined by the electric five-string violist, Martha Muck. And welcome, Martha, and thank you so much for coming.
Thanks, Marvin. It's really great to be here.
Yeah, I remember when you came here a few years ago.
It seems like just 2 years ago.
And, but it's going to be a tremendous amount of fun. And the studio looks very, very, something is going on in here with all the electronics and all the equipment.
A little bit of clutter on the floor.
A little bit of clutter, and we'll be talking about that in just a little bit. Acclaimed for her electrifying performances and compositions, pioneering composer and electroacoustic violist Martha Muck transcends musical boundaries, enhancing her classical training and expertise with extended techniques, digital effects processing, and improvisation. A Yamaha artist and leading clinician on electric and progressive string playing, she has toured with, listen to this group, Barbara Streisand, Peter Gabriel, Andrea Bocelli, and Star Wars in concert, and has performed with Listen to this. Elton John, Lou Reed, Iggy Pop, Laurie Anderson, Tony Bennett, Bon Jovi, Patti Smith, and many, many others. She has received awards from ASCAP, Meet the Composer, Arts International, and fellowships at the McDowell Colony, and has been commissioned by many ensembles. Her catalog includes solo, chamber, symphonic band, and orchestra works, as well as multimedia, film, theater, and ballet scores. Well, that's quite a little bio with all those people you have performed with.
Yeah, it's been a real privilege to work with a lot of
And we might talk a little more about some of those. That means that you have personal connection with, let's say, Elton John and some of these others?
Or? I'm not as close as I would like, but having the opportunity to perform with him was really spectacular.
Yeah. Very good. Well, we'll get to more of that probably later. Before we go on, though, why don't you tell us briefly about the work we just heard, On Motion, which, if I am not mistaken, was composed for an art exhibition.
Yeah, it was an art exhibition that didn't really happen.
Oh, okay.
But I created the work anyway, mm-hmm. and it was the idea had to do with, I think the art had to do with different people, personalities, and the personality that was inspiring me was Oprah Winfrey.
Oh, okay.
And so originally, when I was creating it, I had a title of OOO, and then it sort of morphed into a combination of O and emotion, and it became O-motion.
Oh, so that's the background. I was wondering.
So, yeah, and then I kept it in my back catalog, and when I re-released No Ordinary Window as a digital-only format, I included this as a bonus track.
As like a bonus track, yes, and I noticed that. We're going to talk more in just a couple minutes about this new reissue.
Great.
Because I want you to be able to talk about it, because it is a little bit different with the way it's put together, I guess, with track labels and what have you.
Yeah, well, you have to go with the flow of the times, and streaming has changed a lot of the way that people that put out recordings have to accommodate.
So. Yeah, I guess. I get it. Well, let's move on. We are going to listen to a tremendous amount of music today, some of which will be performed live right here in the studio, which, as I said, has a tremendous amount of equipment in it. When I have guests, though, I always like to go back to the beginning. Tell me a little bit about your early exposures to music. Were your parents musical?
My parents were not musical.
Oh, okay. That was quick.
Not in the slightest.
That was fast.
But somehow my sister and I both picked up a little bit of the mm-hmm. musical bug. And in our early years, we both played viola. And there are many pictures and a few videos of us playing duets together quite a lot.
Okay.
Through high school, and I continued on with my studies. In high school, we had a really good program in the New York City public school system in Staten Island.
Oh, okay.
And that was, I was, you know, intending to be a classical violist, and which I became. But on the side road, sort of parallel to that, somebody in my high school gave me a recording of Jean-Luc Ponty.
And I guess that was the deciding factor.
I can definitely point to that being a game changer in,
the trajectory
of my career.
So this is back when you were still in high school.
Right? Yeah.
All right. Okay. Because I've seen some recordings, older recordings mainly, of you being the violist in an ensemble. This stuff goes back. Some of this stuff goes back.
In chamber orchestra.
Sure.
Well, I've been a recording artist for quite some time, and I do recordings with other artists, chamber orchestras, mm-hmm. and orchestras, string quartets, and other pop artists.
Right. Well, that's great. Let me ask you now this: contemporary music. Did you have a When you were young, when you were in high school, did you develop an interest in people like Stravinsky and Schoenberg and all that, or not really?
A little bit. And I have to tell you, what piqued my interest was actually watching with my father the Boston Pops when they would play their programs with Arthur Fiedler. And somehow, whether it was the Pops or some other orchestra, playing Stravinsky Rite of Spring. And I just was taken by the timpani and the excitement of the
you know,
orchestral
it's
sounds.
Something. So many people bring that one piece of music as their main interest. And what you really think about how innovative it was back in 1913 at the premiere, I think May 29th.
Yeah, that would cause a riot.
It would cause a riot. And now you listen to it as a traditional piece of music. How things have changed.
Context is everything.
The context is everything. And of course, Stravinsky was a very major composer. And the thing that's so, I think, really interesting about Stravinsky is that he wrote all this stuff with rhythms, but he became with the neoclassicism. He was 12 tone. I mean, he encompassed so many through his career styles of the 20th century.
Yeah, took a lot of chances as well. And I'm incredibly influential on so many musicians and composers, including myself.
Well, I want to talk now about your interest in composition. Do you remember your very first pieces?
I used to write a lot of songs. I played guitar.
Oh.
And I used to sit there with the guitar for hours. I would lose track of time, and I wrote songs and sang them, and I recorded some. And in fact, when I was a student at State University of New York in Albany, I wrote a song and submitted it. They had a telethon, SUNY Albany telethon, and my song got picked to be the theme song of the telethon. I think it was 1983. Special Children, Special Dreams.
1983.
I have to find that recording somewhere. I have the video.
Oh, you want to put it up. I would love to see. That would be great. Oh, my gosh. It's amazing how fast the time does go. Your five-string electric viola, when did you start writing specifically for that?
When I got my first instrument many years ago, right? Uh-huh. After I was discovering Jean-Luc Ponty, I actually had my parents take me down to Manny's on 48th Street when there were still music stores on 48th Street.
Yeah.
And I went in and bought the same instrument that he's cradling on A Taste for Passion. Mm-hmm. And that was my first five-string. It was a violin because I couldn't find any violas at that time. And then gradually I found a maker that made a five-string electric viola according to my specifications. And there wasn't really anything to play. I was playing along with other people's recordings and learning to jam and improvise.
Right, right.
That's when I decided to start writing for myself. So it really emerged out of improvisations, and those became pieces.
Yeah, yeah. And you still do a lot of improv.
I do quite a lot of improv. And for me, that's a really special element of doing live concerts, is that because my improvisations, they vary from place to place, from audience to audience, and it really depends on the room and the people in the room.
And the type of audience you have, I guess, too.
Exactly.
Very good. Oh, that's great. Yeah. Well, now let's go to some more music. We're going to hear a pair of selections from a six-part work titled No Ordinary Window. And I see you're smiling. The entire work was premiered at the Tribeca New Music Festival in May of 2014. And we are going to hear the second and third sections, Stained Glass and Inner Window 2. Now, tell us about this composition and about the new remastered release we talked very briefly about
right.
a moment ago.
No Ordinary Window, it's sort of a concept piece, and I broke it down into sections. It exists as one unit piece, but it's about 15 or 16 minutes. And when I first put it out on the CD a couple of years ago, I didn't want to sell the one track for the same price that a 3-minute track. So it kind of held it back from actually being able to be streamed on iTunes and Spotify.
Like 15 minutes or whatever.
Right. So I had to come to terms with, if I wanted my music to get out there, I needed to reframe the situation. So I re-edited the long form pieces on my on the recording, which included the title track No Ordinary Window and a piece called A Dream in Sound.
Right.
And I broke them up into shorter movements,
we'll
call them movements, sections. And so this way, a 2.5-minute piece can be played, or if you want to still play the full piece, 15-minute piece, it's possible.
Well, we're going to hear two movements from this score right now. This is music by my guest Martha Mook and performed by the composer on her electric five-string viola.
Thank you.
You were just listening to a pair of selections from No Ordinary Window by my guest Martha Mook, who performed on her electric five-string viola. Well, I am here with Martha. Martha, welcome back.
Thanks.
After, I guess, about 5 minutes of music, but we're going to be listening to a tremendous amount of music between now and 11 o'clock. I would like to talk with you now a bit about the work you do as an educator. You have traveled worldwide and have presented master classes, workshops, and lectures. This is, of course, very special and important work today. What types of activities do you do as part of these events, and do you work with all ages?
I do. I work with all ages, and I adapt my different workshops and presentations depending on if I'm working with a group of kindergartners or if I'm going into a university or conservatory setting. But it all boils down to being able to and finding that inner voice. Mm-hmm. And so whether it's through improvisation, through creating your own music, just being able to have that sense of self to be able to express your inner voice, your creativity.
Right.
And so it's really interesting because the younger kids have more of that.
They're more open, I know.
Yeah, they're not afraid to give. They're not afraid to try anything. And so one of the things that I do as the students get older, and I also do workshops for teachers as well, is to access these things that get cut off or they get repressed as you hear the, no, don't do that, or no, you'll sound terrible, or people are afraid to make mistakes, they're afraid to sound silly in front of their peers. So there's all these inhibitive factors. And it really, it quelches the that creative voice, which is really important. And for me, going into these workshops and seeing that aha moment, that light bulb go off, when a student realizes they can do something or a teacher understands how they can communicate to a student, or a high school ensemble can get together without feeling like they're going to sound stupid or people are going to laugh at them.
Or they're going to be judged, and you got to worry about what other people think.
Right, and so I've come up with different ways, different exercises to level the playing field. So
let me ask you this, Martha. Do you have to be a string player for these to have effect, or?
No, I mean, not at all. It relates to any kind of creative voice. Can be a singer, can be even a spoken word, can be percussionist, and it depends on the level of a person's playing. If they're really sophisticated in their playing, then we take it to that level. Mm-hmm. If they're beginners, then we use the instrument in different ways. But the main thing is to be able to put something out there and access that.
Because I know in my work, the students, because I teach various history classes for high school students, they love new music. They love it. I mean, and you know, on one of my classes several years ago, actually not even that long ago, I played one of these really cool new music things for recorder, piano, and violin, with wonderful video, upbeat video. And when one of the students said during my break, I downloaded that on my phone, I felt, you know what, this is the type of stuff that makes it all worthwhile.
Right.
You know, there's a lot out there too, a lot of exploring to do.
Yeah, it's about communication. It's and relating. Each person relates in different ways. And, you can't teach a class and expect everybody to learn the same way and respond the same way. So you have to be willing to understand that and to do a certain amount of personal...
Mm-hmm. Well, students must love your events.
Yeah.
Well, I would imagine. I mean, once you loosen them up a little bit at the beginning.
Yeah, there's a big cool factor in it. They're a little bit maybe skeptical at first, but once they dive in, I find that they take that with them even after the session is over, and they continue to explore.
Now, going back to think, I didn't want to interrupt you, but going back to all the events you've done, is there any one happening within that event with a group of students that you'll never forget? Something very special that happened. A memory. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think it probably...
Everyone probably maybe has. There's so many.
Each one has a special element to it, for sure. Yeah. Maybe the very first one, which made me know that I was on the right track, way back when I went back to my alma mater for the first time, SUNY Albany.
Yeah.
And I did a workshop for my former teacher, Nathan Gottschalk, and he brought his chamber music class. And the students had no idea what to expect, and I had them doing all kinds of crazy things. And there was a pianist that I kept saying, you know, don't think about what you're doing. This just makes sounds and explore sounds. And I had him playing inside the piano and underneath the piano and doing all sorts of things. And at the end of the session, he just looked and he said, wow, you know, I've never done anything that before.
That's right.
And he was so excited.
And you said something which I'm going to share before we go to our next topic, because I want to get to your band concerto with viola, electric viola. But you said something that older people are more inhibited.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you and people who improvise and get out there, you know what you just told me today, because of what I do and I never want to be inhibited with music and what I perform and what I share here. You know what you said to me? I'll never get old because I'll live forever because I never am inhibited with what I do and you yourself.
Right.
And I think there's when you put it in, you know what it is, though? It puts it into perspective of always thinking and doing something new, which is so inspiring.
But I think the important thing is maybe not to overthink it, not to think that you always have to be doing that. But what is important to do is
be free.
Find that voice that allows you to discover.
The freedom.
Yeah.
The freedom. Anyway, let's go on now. You will be playing some in the studio in just a little while, and I know everybody is looking forward to that. Before we get to your live performances, though, tell us briefly about your output as a composer. Now, you've written other pieces as well, not just things for the viola.
Right. Well, that's where it started, and then gradually I started expanding writing for small ensembles.
Right.
I have a string quartet, Scorcio, so I've written some works for our quartet. And I've also adapted some works that were created with the duo that I have with Randy Hudson called Boeing.
Oh, yes.
And there's a piece called Quantum, which I made into a string quartet. And also we have a quintet version with a bass holding down some really cool.
So, yeah, you've done a big variety of stuff I saw on your website. Well, let's go now to your Xing for electric viola and concert band. We're going to hear the first and third movements. Tell us about this piece and our performers.
Well, that Xing, also known as crossing, came out of a conversation I had with a French horn player, Chris Willem, who was conducting the Richwood Concert Band in New Jersey. And we were talking about collaboration, and we said, wouldn't it be cool if I wrote a piece and for electric viola and concert band, and you know, there's no competition with the electric viola. I can crank it to 11. And so we both thought it was a cool idea, and we made it happen. And he put out a notice to his colleagues, and so his band signed on right away. And then I always go to this Midwest Band and Orchestra Clinic every year, and run into lots of band directors, and I happened to run into Gary Hill, who was from